G'day guys, Jasper here. Just wanted to put a note at the top of the episode to let you know we experienced a bit of an audio issue recording this one. You might hear a bit of a hissing noise if you're playing it out loud through speakers. It's just because we were recording in a slightly different location and the levels were a bit off. So just wanted to say sorry for that and let you know that the issue does sort of resolve about halfway through and it won't be an issue in future weeks. Thanks for understanding, guys, and enjoy the show.
I don't think we've ever seen anything like this before.
Two brothers.
Harley's got all the facts tonight. Jasper is a trivia weapon. Get out of his way.
A bunch of trivia questions.
Trivia is cool, and that makes these guys two cool guys.
Everything's on the line in today's episode of...
How do they keep getting it right?
Trivia Champ or Trivia Chump?
Giddy up, it is trivia time here on Trivia Champ or Trivia Chump. My name is Jasper, thanks for joining us. I'm here with my co-host and brother, Harley. How are you going?
Very well, yourself?
Mate, good. Have you had a good day?
Hectic day, but good day.
We've rung in the new year in style in Sydney. It's got. What are your New Year's resolutions? Do you have any?
I'm one of those people that has New Year's resolutions as long as I can't hold them. So I set up multiple, fail multiple, hold on to one or two.
Okay, that's good.
They involve the gym, they involve eating healthy, cutting down my coffee intake,
That
kind of thing. I've had two coffees today.
You do like your coffee.
Yeah, I've had two coffees today, 2 days in. We'll see if I can resist the temptation further.
Yeah. I think my resolutions tend to steer more towards sort of abstract things like... A 1 year is like, be a better brother to our younger sister. And that's like, you can get to the end of the year and have convinced yourself that you did that.
Yeah.
Whether or not you actually did, like, you know what I mean? Rather than go to the gym 5 times a week. Well, I know if I did or didn't do that, you know, like, but if it's more abstract, not only is it like when you tell people they're more impressed by it.
Yeah.
It also is kind of like, I did do it, but no one will ever know.
Yeah.
Do you have a fun fact to start us off here in our episode today?
I do. So I was researching a world geography topic and I had a mountain fact in it, and I wrote another one and then realized I can't double up on the mountains.
Okay.
Despite mountains quite often, you know, coming in ranges.
For sure.
What country outlawed mountaineering of high peaks in the 90s and as a result is home to the largest unscaled peak in the world?
I actually do know this fact. It's a really good fact. I believe it's Bhutan.
It is Bhutan. Very nice.
Because I think I forget the name of the actual mountain, but I think there's like a local belief that there are like gods and spirits on top of that mountain. So you can't actually go and visit it.
Interesting. I didn't even get that far. I just backspaced before I got to that point. Yeah.
And Thimphu, the capital of Bhutan, is the only world capital city without traffic lights.
Yes. I definitely knew that.
Which I think is a pretty cool fact.
And the airport, Paro Airport there, has got one of the most insane approaches ever. If you're in front of a computer, look up just like Bhutan flying approach. Just, you know, like a GPS approach between mountains. It's pretty spectacular views.
Is it you know when they have the like top five craziest airports?
Yes.
That's
you might have seen it on that kind of reel or TikTok or YouTube video for sure.
I went to one of those when I went to Everest Base Camp. You fly into Lukla is like number one on all those lists, and I didn't realize till we were like on approach. I was like, oh, it's that one. it was scary. You wouldn't want to be afraid, and you're in like a rickety small aircraft as well. It's not like you're in a big plane.
Yeah.
My fun fact was, you know the Matrix, the film The Matrix?
Yep.
The Wachowskis, the two siblings that directed and wrote The Matrix, first met Lawrence Fishburne, who played Morpheus, at the Mike Tyson fight where he bit Evander Holyfield's ear.
That's a very bizarre fact.
That was like, can you actually imagine, like, hey, my name's Lawrence, I'd love to be in your... Oh my God, look at that ear.
Well, he didn't like bite his ear off.
Well, I think part of it came off.
Yeah?
I think so.
Right.
I'm gonna look at that up.
I might look that up as well. I thought it was just like a little chomp.
He definitely took a decent sort of...
Yeah, he wasn't nibbling it. Like, it wasn't flirtatious.
No, it was... I hope Evander wasn't...
I'm just Googling it a little bit. No, apparently... Okay,
bit came off.
Ooh.
He said it tasted like chicken.
Yeah, okay, let's get cracking. All
right.
Harley and Jasper have nominated 3 special subjects to be quizzed on by the other person. The 3 special subject rounds will feature 5 questions for each contestant. The trivia champ will be the person who answers the most questions correctly by the end of the game.
All right, so let's crack into round 1, but let's just hear a little overview of the topics that we're going to be dealing with today. Harley, you've elected to hear questions about words we've stolen, swing low, and Sweet Chariot.
Mm-hmm.
And I gotta say, writing five interesting questions in Sweet Chariot was a monumental task.
Yeah, so you've said that to me. I thought I was happy for you to take quite a bit of, you know, quite a liberal license. Approach to yeah. this, to that one. But if they're all about chariots, well, I'm stoked.
Hope you've studied your Roman transport methods, mate, because they are chariots. What am I going to be hearing questions about?
You're going to be hearing about, yep, that's me. You're probably wondering how I got here.
Yeah.
You're going to be hearing about cool, which frankly you should know about, and world geography.
Okay, so that's a nice little spread there. So let's crack into round one, question one for you, Harley, in words we've stolen.
Mm-hmm.
Round one.
Question one. Thamsanka Janchi attracted worldwide criticism for performing incorrect sign language next to speechmakers at the 2013 memorial service for which world leader?
Well, straight off the bat, that's sounding kind of like a subcontinental name, or perhaps African. I'm trying to think of African leaders. The one that's really coming to mind and won't stick is Gaddafi. But I think maybe it might have been a bit more controversial. Some other things surrounding Gaddafi's funeral, other than just the sign language. In fact, they might not have even had a sign interpreter.
Yeah, I don't know how woke Gaddafi's press agents were, but also
I don't know if he even got really a funeral, to be honest.
Well, also too, worldwide criticism. I don't know how much people are tuning in to watch the live stream of Muammar Gaddafi sent off into the afterlife.
Can you imagine that? Oh, mate, did you catch Gaddafi's funeral? Great, but I don't know about that sign language. But the speeches were touching, frankly, you know, and the slideshow they did of photos of him, great, but...
But the sign language? Yeah, come on,
I'm the only other world leader I can think of in that time is perhaps Nelson Mandela or Boutros-Boutros-Ghali. And once again, Boutros-Boutros-Ghali, I think he might have died a bit earlier. Mandela, you know... A lot of people would have tuned into that. People would have, it would have been quite, not extravagant, but quite renowned. So I'm going to go with Mandela.
Yeah. Can you imagine someone trying to sign Boutros-Ghali? That would be a mission. Well, you're correct. It was Nelson Mandela. So you're one for one. Afterwards, Janchi insisted he was a fully qualified interpreter and put his behavior down to a sudden schizophrenic episode. So if you watch it, he's literally like making the equivalent of nonsense words or like words that are incorrect. And I think it was on Jimmy Kimmel, they had like an actual sign interpreter come and translate what he was saying. And it's basically gibberish. But anyway, the South African government later admitted that the company who supplied Janchi had a history of providing substandard services. So whether or not he could walk the walk, talk the talk, well, not talk, sign the sign, not quite sure. But anyway, that was correct. You're on the board. Do you remember this at the time? It was quite a big news story.
I don't. I would have been probably 14. I would have been 14 at the time. I remember Mandela's death. I don't remember this about the funeral, though.
Yeah, okay. Well, you're off to a good start here. Question two in words we've stolen. Which word for a boorish Australian man traces its origins back to the Mavis Bramston Show, an Australian sketch comedy show of the 1960s that featured a character of the same name who embodied the current meaning of the word?
So, a word for a boorish
sort of slovenly Australian man. I think its meaning these days is probably taken on a little bit of a broader.
Yeah, I'm thinking there's a few options. I'm thinking something like bogan, something like yobbo. I'm trying to think.
You're on the right lines.
Yeah, I think I'm going to lock in yobbo, but I'm not really particularly convinced.
You're on the right track there. It's actually ochre. So the satirical Mavis Bramston show ran between 1964 and 1968 and is often credited as the first significant Australian-made comedy TV series. Mavis Bramston herself was not an actual person, because I was trying to Google who is Mavis Bramston. Not a real person, but the name is actually an old Melbourne theatre term for an over-the-top actress. And ochre was a recurring character who was sort of an Aussie sort of bloke.
There you go.
Yeah.
Interesting trivia.
So you're on one out of two.
Mm-hmm.
Question three, it's a sports question.
Mm-hmm.
Lending its name to Boston's NHL team and derived from the Dutch word for brown, Bruin is an archaic term for what kind of animal? What animal is a Bruin?
A Bruin. Well, if it's Dutch, I mean, the Dutch had some pretty big interest in Africa. Bruin. Once again, another one I'm not particularly sure of. They had interest in America as well. I'm going to say an eagle, perhaps, because, you know, Brown kind of all over the world a little bit. I don't know. It's just a guess, but...
So a Bruin is actually a bear.
A bear.
So the name Bruins most commonly refers to bears in children's fairy tales. That's when you sort of sometimes hear the word. That was chosen by the team's original general manager. The Bruins are actually notable for being the first NHL team to sign an African-American player, Willie O'Ree, who began his career as a winger in 1958. Question 4. A lyric from the chorus of Instant Karma by John Lennon and the Plastic Ono Band inspired the title of which 1977 American novel, which was adapted into a movie in 1980. Do you know the song?
I know the song. Yeah. So it's a film in 1980.
Yeah.
And a book in 1977.
Yeah. I think you probably would know it's a book as well, but you may have even seen this movie. You definitely be familiar with the name.
It's Will We All Shine On, like the moon and the stars and the sun. Yeah, we all shine on and on and on and on.
Mhm.
So there's
a stirring rendition.
There's not that many lyrics, right?
Mm.
But nothing's jumping out at me particularly as a film. Moon and the Star and the Sun.
Is there a refrain there that maybe...
On and on and on and on.
Yeah.
I
sort of like a...
Like, shine on, but shine on and on. I'm gonna go with shine on because it's really... None of that's particularly jumping out at me as a film, to be honest.
You've come tantalizingly close. It's The Shining.
The
Shining by Stephen King, turned into the movie in 1980. Stephen King famously disliked the film adaptation, despite it now being pretty much a classic horror movie, and was more taken with a miniseries that was produced in the 1990s that had Elliot Gould and Melvin Van Peebles in supporting roles. Anyway, all right, so this is question 5 here. This has been a bit of a tough set, but there's still plenty of time.
I'm going to rewrite your questions, make them all hard.
It's a long game, okay? All right, question 5, and this actually draws on one of your strengths. Derived from a regional Italian word meaning little man and included in the Italian dictionary Zingarelli from 2021, the word umarel, now adopted into English, describes an elderly man who stands around in public and gives unsolicited advice to what specific profession?
I actually know this because it's my future. I believe this, and like it's particularly, I think, associated with Mediterranean men, even in like Australia. Oh, okay. Gives unsolicited advice to builders, doesn't it? And like tradesmen.
So he stands around outside construction sites, and the Wikipedia entry, which isn't my only source, by the way. The Wikipedia entry says that specifically if he has like hands clasped behind his back while he gives
advice. that's so classic. I completely get it.
So according to this, is I found this an interesting tidbit. According to Bolognese news site, like from Bologna, not pasta, La Republic, the city of Riccione allocated an 11,000 euro budget for umarels to oversee work sites in late 2015. And the idea was that the umarels could serve as supervisors if a professional was not available. Can you imagine that? Like, you come home from work one day and go, honey, I've been an amateur umarel for so long, now finally getting my break in the big leagues.
Can you imagine if you're like just below manager at a building site in Italy and they're like, babe, I got home and, you know, Giuseppe, the foreman, wasn't around today. He's replaced with a retiree that has no idea about building.
What does it say if you're the building supervisor? That can't feel good. It's like, sorry guys, I've been sick tomorrow. Who's going to replace me? I'll probably just Franco from up the road. It's like, what? But I've done this for years. Like, nah, for all Franco stands around, he's got his hands clasped behind his back. No, he's talking about.
There you go. I thought you were going to say that they budgeted 11,000 euros for the amount of inefficiency caused by people giving unsolicited advice to the builders. It's like, we just know we're going to have to factor at least 30 man hours a week to be explaining to old men that it's not their job to tell people how to do their job.
Or like reparations for like the crap advice they gave. It's like, oh man, I knew we should use paper on the walls. I knew we should use bricks instead.
Yes, I am actually familiar with that term, believe it or not.
Okay, well, so you've had a bit of a comeback there to finish round one, Words Were Stolen, with 2 out of 5.
Excellent, excellent. Are you ready to hear about, yep, that's me? You're probably wondering how I got here.
I am, and I'm so intrigued to see where you go with this, with the questions.
Excellent. Well, let's crack into it then. So, are you familiar with Volodymyr Zelensky?
I know him well, not personally.
Yeah. So he famously starred in a political satire television television program where a high school teacher is unexpectedly elected the president of Ukraine after a politically charged rant becomes a viral sensation. What's the name of the television show? It also is the name of his political party.
Ooh, I don't know this at all, actually.
Really?
No, well, is it a Ukrainian word?
Well, I mean, it translated to English. It's a phrase.
Yeah, okay. If I think of, like, I presume it's like a sketch sort of Saturday Night Live equivalent sort of show, I think, that he was in?
No. It's like a series.
Oh, it's like a series.
Yes, like, the show, because he's an actor, you know that, right?
Yeah, and he was an actor.
Yeah, he was in this show, basically, where he's a history teacher.
Mm.
He goes on, like, a foul-mouthed rant about the political situation and corruption, gets posted online, goes viral, and he basically inadvertently becomes president of Ukraine.
Wow.
In the show.
Yeah.
And everyone, I think he was always kind of erudite as a comedian, and, you know, everyone, I think, got around that idea, and he actually ran and won, as we know.
Yeah. Well, I actually have no idea. I was thinking maybe if it was like a big sketch comedy show, it might be something around like For the People or something, like something sort of invoking the fact that it's like a big crowded cast, and also that might work for a political party. I actually can't think of anything though, so I'm going to say something like, what's a good name for a sitcom, like set in a school, like Classes in Session.
You're actually very close with what you said earlier. Then the title of it is translated to English as Servant of the People.
Oh, okay. So it was, like, pretty close.
Very close. Yeah.
What did I say? Like,
of the people.
Okay.
Or for the people.
For the people, yeah.
So early versions of the show were called Servant of the Nation, but the party is directly translated to, and, you know, I think word for word, the translation is Servant of the People of the show.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Okay.
Oh, so pretty close on that one. The term a soddy defense refers to cases of stolen identity in the criminal courts.
Yep.
What does SODDI, SODI, stand for?
It's a system of defense. Like, it's like a,
yeah, it's a slang term.
Okay.
For a defense that the entire identity is incorrect.
Basically. Okay. Someone of different something something. Did you say it was DI or DY?
DI.
Okay. So wait, the defense is like,
is basically,
that's not me in the footage. Yeah, that's someone
it's
else.
Full mistaken identity.
Something of didn't do it. Oh, something didn't do it. Suspect or, oh. It's like, okay, but I think it's something or didn't do it. Like, I feel like I've spent about 20 minutes on this. I'm gonna say suspected or didn't do it. No.
Okay. It stands for, and there's two renditions, it sounds really dopey, some other dude did it. Or even better, some other dude done it.
Can women use that as a defense?
I don't know. We're yet to see.
I think we're all equal unto the eyes of the law.
But it is a slang term, but if you look it up, there's plenty of law firms that, like, you know, say they specialize in
the
soddy cases.
You, like, you. Yeah. How can you specialize in that, though?
I mean, there's ones that specialize in, like, dog bites.
Yeah, I'm a Mac at dog bites, for sure. Okay, well, I think I was knocking down the door on that one.
Exactly, yeah.
Close, but no donut cops.
Yeah. So, question three.
Yes.
In 2023, a Morris, Illinois employee, Gail Lewis, of what major company went viral for her melodramatic last shift after a 10-year stint as sales associate?
Oh my gosh.
Major US company.
Okay. When did you say this was?
It was like a month ago. November 2023.
Right, okay. As in, like, melodramatic, like, she did, like, some big sign-off or something, or, like, did some big stint. Okay. If I think of, like, a major US retail sort of sales thing, something like Walmart, something like, Tesco? No, that's British. What are their other big sort of retailers? Costco?
Mm-hmm.
I,
Look, I think it's one of those ones, like an actual pub trivia. If you don't know it and you don't guess the most obvious one, mm-hmm. you feel a bit silly because that's what it often is. So I'm just going to go with Walmart, but presumably there is a story here that I've completely missed. And hopefully you can tell us all about it.
I'm surprised you've missed this. You are correct. It is Walmart. So on the board there. I can't believe you missed that. So it's her standing in like the empty aisles of her Walmart, Morris, Illinois, you know, reading out her associate number, Gail Lewis signing off. And then there's a selfie cam video of her saying, you know, in tears, saying that she, you know, she's very emotional to be leaving her position, even though she's going to a better one. And it was very military the way that she spoke into the walkie-talkie right. when she signed off. And there are a lot of comments that were, you know, jokingly saying, you know, she should be given a purple cart. I served with her on aisle 7 for 3 rotations, things like that. And like, I mean, most of it was very wholesome content about it.
Yeah.
And actually, as a fundraiser, it got taken down on eBay, but someone claimed, and it was a fundraiser, that they had a signed Walmart high-vis vest of hers.
Wow.
Yeah. And it went up like into the thousands of dollars.
All right. Well, so I'm on 1 out of 3. Moving on to question 4.
Question number 4. So, in 2018, Giuseppe Conte became the Prime Minister of Italy, despite having never held an elected political position in his life before the election. He led a coalition of independents and multiple parties. Prior to his political career, he was a professor of what?
Giuseppe, mate, how did you do it?
Professor Giuseppe to you.
Professor Conte. Okay, well, I'm going to think that it has to be something. I mean, all professors are erudite and smart and stuff, but I'm going to think that it might be something that might help you in politics. So even if you haven't, been a politician, maybe people look and go, well, he was a professor of like commerce or like sort of finance, something like that, that maybe is helpful. Like when you're a prime minister, I don't think it's going to be like professor of
geology,
right? Like could be like, and you know what? If you're a professor of geology, fair play to you, but. Also, I think my friend Isabel's dad has a doctorate in geology.
Okay, so,
I think sorry. So. I don't think he's not a professor. He like works in the field and stuff. I think he's got a PhD in geology.
Yeah, yeah.
Definitely a geologist. Anyway, I think it's got to be something that's a little bit politics adjacent.
Mm-hmm.
Like maybe like international studies or like something. And you know what? My first thought was something sort of financy. So I'm going to say he was a professor of commerce.
I like where you were going.
Yep.
He's got a background that a lot of politicians have. He was a professor of law.
Duh, I should have guessed.
So basically what happened was, from my memory,
yep.
There were two major parties that were, you know, huge in, or actually more than two. There was a few major parties that were huge basically taking out the discontent of Italians.
Yep.
From memory, they were the Cinque Stelle, which was the Five Star Movement founded by a comedian, funnily enough.
Oh, wow.
Called Beppe Grillo, and the Forza Italia, which is like the populist party, and yep. neither of them could really decide who was going to lead in the coalition, and they decided this independent professor of law, freshly appointed, we're going to make him the prime minister. We're on 1 from 4, so we're right in hard questions for one another. 2013, Barkhad Abdi won nominations for a SAG, a Golden Globe, an Oscar, and a BAFTA award, despite having never acted in a film prior. What film did he receive these nominations for? Most of which were in the category of Best Supporting Actor.
Yeah, I reckon I know this. You said 2013?
2013.
I reckon he was potentially the look at me, I'm the captain now guy from Captain Phillips, which is actually on TV last night. I was watching some of it.
That's cheating.
No, I was watching something because the Big Bash got rained out. And I'm pretty sure it happens every now and then. Like, it happened in the 90s with Dances with Wolves. I'm pretty sure some of the people in that had never really acted before.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's obviously got quite a large Native American cast.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I think some of the people in that hadn't really done too much acting and then were, like, nominated for awards and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I'm going to say he's the look at me, I'm the captain now guy from Captain Phillips.
Absolutely, yes. Yep. He played the part of Abdulali Muse, if I'm pronouncing that right, in Captain Phillips.
Mm-hmm. Has he acted before again?
He has acted since. I don't think in anything quite as high profile.
Well, that's pretty big to start with. I mean, you start something like that with Tom Hanks. I mean, you wouldn't really judge him, not judge him, but you wouldn't really go, mate, you've stuffed up if you don't do a movie like that again, because that's starting off pretty good.
Yeah. So, yeah, there you go. Well done. End of the category. You're on 2 from 5. So, am I right in saying it's neck and neck?
It's 2-2 heading into round 2.
Round 2.
So round 2, you're hearing questions on swing low.
Mm-hmm. Excellent.
Okay. So I've tried to mix it up here a bit. Some of the questions are about low things, some are about swinging things. So it's a bit of both. We're starting off with a low thing. Question one. From two guesses, name one of the two national capital cities that lie lower than sea level. The lowest of the two is home to one of few major ports on the Caspian Sea, mm-hmm. while the second lowest was only officially noted in its country's constitution as the capital city in 1983.
Okay. So, two guesses, you said?
Yeah, from two guesses, name one.
Well, there's not many cities on the Caspian Sea.
No, I think that's your best bet if you don't really know.
Yeah. I'm going to guess that that is potentially Baku, Azerbaijan. And I'm going to guess that the other one, which is a famously low city, short of getting low,
yep.
Is Amsterdam.
Jeez, Doc, give you an extra point because you've actually got both of them there. No. That's you're absolutely right. And you've thrown in a Flowrider reference to boot.
I know, that should be earning an extra point.
Technically, Flowrider is pretty low as well itself. Wow, do you think he meant to do that? Because Florida is like low on the...
No, I think so. I think he just wanted to make some money.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean...
Have you seen actually... Sorry, aside, have you seen... I mean, I'm sure you've got a fact written about both these cities here, but I've got a funner fact.
Yep.
Do you know about... Have I told you about the Flowrider court case?
No.
I can't remember the specifics of it, but basically he did some early advertising for a company basically that said like, oh yeah, if you do... I don't even remember if it was like a PR at events or something, we'll give you a share of the company. And the company got very large. I can't even remember what it was. And he took them to court saying, hey, I own 20% of this company because of this contract and you're not, you know...
Not paying me.
Paying me. And as part of it, part of the evidence was one of his songs and he's in the cross-examination stand and he's sitting there jamming to his own song, like having a little dance while sitting there fully suited up. Like, in front of the lawyers and everything.
He also, too... Do you know he represented a country in Eurovision, wouldn't you?
What country?
He represented San Marino.
There you go.
He was part of San Marino's entry 1 year at Eurovision. I don't think he is San Marinese. I don't know what the demonym is, but he absolutely did.
How did they go?
I think they were low in the rankings, mate. I don't think they did particularly well.
I don't know how we got talking about Flowrider, but there you go.
You did very well there. About one third of the Netherlands lies below sea level, including the capital Amsterdam, which is 2 meters below sea level. Mm-hmm. Baku lies 28 meters below sea level. And probably the reason that it is so low there, Caspian Sea is actually not part of the ocean. It's an inland sea. Mm-hmm. And Azerbaijan itself is a long way from the ocean. You need to go through either Iran to the south to get to the Persian Gulf, or cross Armenia and Turkey to get to the Mediterranean. So quite a long way away from sea level, from the sea, hence why it is a little bit lower below sea level. But you've done excellently well there to get both of those, so well done. Question two. Which legend of swing music, born with the first name Edward, got his nickname from a prim and proper high school classmate who wanted to give him a fancy title if they were going to be hanging around together so much? What? You give me a look. Who do you reckon?
This man takes the A train, doesn't he?
He potentially...
Are we talking about... I think the name is Duke Ellington.
He potentially takes the A train. Is that what you're looking in with?
I'm looking at Duke Ellington.
Yeah, you're correct there, mate. Yes. He was one of the originators of big band jazz and either wrote or co-wrote such jazz standards as Don't Get Around Much Anymore, Caravan, Mood Indigo, and Sophisticated Lady.
Excellent.
And yeah, it was sort of an eccentric high school classmate gave him that nickname. I was researching this and I actually found an interview with Duke Ellington himself talking about that. So it was very interesting.
You know, he was Take the A Train, right?
I don't think he wrote it, but he definitely popularized it.
Do you know why it's called Take the A Train?
Yeah, it was. I know this from a Final Jeopardy clue on Jeopardy. Yeah, cool.
I think
I think it was like directions to someone's house or something in New York.
Yeah.
It was like, oh, you got to take the A Train.
Yeah, and that's basically how I remember it.
It's also one, I don't know if it originated it, but it kind of popularized the ending. That's from Take the A Train.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, there you go. You're on two out of two here in Swing Low. So question three, again, sticking with the swinging theme. The Hanging Gardens of Babylon are one of the seven wonders of the ancient world and the only one whose existence is disputed by scholars. Mm-hmm. But if they did exist in Babylon, the Hanging Gardens would have been in what modern-day Middle Eastern country?
I'm pretty sure I know this.
Really?
And I'm pretty sure most people think they probably did exist because a lot of traders came back talking of them.
Okay.
I think Babylon was in modern Iran, if you're not American.
Okay, we're not American.
Yeah. Is it Iran?
Going with Iran. Mate, it's actually Iraq.
Oh.
So you're pretty close there. You're 3 out of 4 letters were correct.
I know, yeah.
You stumbled at the last one. You end when you should have queued. Babylon was located in ancient Mesopotamia and was about 60 miles southwest of modern-day Baghdad.
There you go.
And like you said, there's dispute about their existence, and it's mainly due to like a lack of sources from the time period.
Yeah.
And also like a lack of archaeological evidence that's been discovered since. Yeah. But you're right, like there is some sort of poems and stuff mention them as well. Mm-hmm. Like there's a poem, which is one of the main sources, I forget who wrote it, of the ancient wonders of the world, and it mentions the Hanging Gardens of Babylon.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's like that would have been quite an advanced structure to have been built in modern day, in ancient Iraq. Why have we not uncovered anything of it?
I think in that era, it was kind of explained to me that a very well-traveled person would have been to Athens, would have been to, would have been to Alexandria, all these places. Very unlikely to have been that way unless they were going, for the sole purpose of trading. And those people weren't kind of like the erudite scholars, historians that wrote these things conclusively.
Well, if you look at a map of where all the ancient wonders are, Babylon is really far away from all the others because they're all kind of around like what is modern day Greece and Turkey, sort of mostly. And then obviously the Great Pyramid in Egypt as well. But it's quite far away from all the others, which again, people go, who actually saw this? Did anyone go here? All right, so you've done pretty well so far. Question 4 in Swing Low. The 1989 comedy Going Overboard has one of the lowest IMDb ratings of any movie ever made, having been rated 1.8 out of 10 from a combined 14,000 reviews. Going Overboard is notable, though, for being the first film role of which then 23-year-old funny man who plays a comedian named Shecky Moskowitz trying to make it big in the world of cruise ship comedy.
Okay, this sounds terrible, and I want to see it. You said 1990?
1989, and he was 23.
So he was 23. So he's born about 1966.
Yep.
If my math is correct, cool. The name was Moskowitz?
Shecky Moskowitz.
Okay. I'm thinking that age and being able to pass off as a Jewish comedian might tell me that this is Billy Madison himself, Adam Sandler. That's going to be my guess, even though I've never heard of this, as much as I do want to see it.
You've gotten there very quickly. It is indeed Adam Sandler. Can I read to you the synopsis here?
Yeah.
So there's not a lot written about like Going Overboard, but I actually do have memories of seeing it in the chuckout bin at JB Hi-Fi. So that's the sort of pedigree we're talking about here.
Okay. $6.98.
This is what I've figured out. Yeah, $6.98. This is what I've figured out about Going Overboard. When the cruise ship's regular comedian accidentally locks himself inside a toilet cubicle, waiter Shecky Moskowitz is given his big break in the ebbing and flowing world of cruise ship comedy. Moskowitz is understandably nervous at first, before King Neptune himself, played by Billy Zane, comes aboard to encourage him. But trouble ensues when a band of assassins storms onto the ship, trying to hunt down a beauty queen. Will the cheeky Moskowitz save the day in time? David Nusser, the film critic, wrote in a retrospective review of the film, Going Overboard remains the absolute and undeniable nadir of Sandler's cluttered filmography. And if my favourite part about it is, if you go to the Wikipedia page now, the poster of the movie is like clearly Adam Sandler's face crudely photoshopped onto like what looks like a computer animated like human making like a sort of expression and face. And he's wearing like 3/4 length boardies. And then on either side of him is like the backs of two women like diving overboard and like with their like bums sticking out.
Right.
It looks absolutely feral, this movie.
It sounds like they're trying to do a lot with potentially a limited budget and not a lot of like screen time. If you've got Bandits, Poseidon, and like starting off comedy, I feel like all of them would basically be enough to write a terrible comedy movie.
Mate, you say it didn't have budget. It had $800,000 budget, which I know is not a lot, but also too. Like,
well, did Adam Sandler have like a stand-up career before that? Like, was he notable for that kind of
thing? Yeah, I think so. Like, I don't think he was a complete nobody. I think, I don't know if he was involved with...
Oh my God, Ma, I got my first acting role. I'm the lead actor in Going Overboard.
Oh, honey, that's... I'm not going to do the Jewish voice. Yeah, you're absolutely right. That's... Yeah, he was a comedian sort of first, okay, and then got into... Yeah, his own big break, which didn't go so well. I mean, not unlike the cheeky Shecky Moskowitz, his own big break coming in less than ideal circumstances.
Yep.
Okay, so you're on 3 out of 4. Question 5, the last one in Swing Low. Question 5. From lowest to highest, rank these 3 Australian celebrities by their price on Cameo. So You Think You Can Dance contestant turned singer and actor Tim-O-Matic. Former Biggest Loser host AJ Rochester and Kelly Crawford, one of the original members of children's entertainment group High Five.
Oh, I do not... I mean, all due respect to these people, I don't know who's getting cameos of any of them. Surely former member of High Five has got to be low. I reckon that's low.
Really?
Mm, I reckon Tim-O-Matic backs himself a lot harder than maybe he should.
Okay.
So you said he was Dancing with the Stars.
He was on So You Think You Can Dance.
Okay, and that's where he got his break.
He was on So You Think You Can Dance. I think he was on either X Factor or Australia's Got Talent singing as well. But he's actually in like musicals and stuff now. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, he's a good performer.
Mate, under the name Tim-O-Matic?
I think it's Tim-O-Margi, his actual name. But, mate, okay, I went and saw In the Heights, which is the musical that the guy wrote Hamilton did before Hamilton. I'm a big musicals fan. And it was like Tim-O-Matic was playing his role, and I was like, oh, let's check this out, guys. Tim-O-Matic's in this. This will be a laugh. He's actually the best one in it. He was so good.
Right, okay, there you go. Okay, I still think Tim-O-Matic, at least in his head, commands a premium over the others.
Okay.
I don't know if AJ Rochester particularly does. I'm going to go Tim-O-Matic. The order that you said, that Tim-O-Matic's the highest, then AJ, then High Five Lady.
You've gotten 3 out of 3. You're absolutely correct. Wow, I thought this was really hard, but you've nailed it. So, Kelly Crawford charges $37. H.A. Rochester is $52, a bit steep in my opinion. And Tim-O-Matic, $74. But Kelly and AJ both have 5 out of 5 star ratings.
Mm-hmm.
Tim-O-Matic's rating is 4.87 because someone gave him 2 out of 5 for saying the person's name wrong. Come on, Tim.
Tim.
AJ's bio says she is, quote, happy to roast your family and friends. Can you imagine waking up on like Christmas morning and it's like, what did you get me, honey? Well, you'll have to open your gift and see. And it's a video of AJ Rochester going, you suck. I've seen so many losers in my time and you're the biggest loser. Can you imagine that? That'd be demoralizing.
That's bizarre. That is really, really bizarre.
Yeah. Well, Kelly Crawford... Yeah, well, sorry, we've done the prices. I don't know. I kind of thought that Kelly Crawford, if you like, grew up watching High Five,
yeah,
maybe that's kind of like a bit of nostalgia value there.
I can't remember. Yeah, I can't remember.
We didn't really have High Five as kids.
No.
But
yeah, we were a Wiggles family.
Wiggles ride or die, for sure. Yeah, but
bleeding purple, blue, red, and yellow.
Absolutely, yeah. Ride or die in the big red car. So, like, it's... But do you see what I mean? Like, I feel like if you were a High Five kid,
yes,
getting, like, a message from one of the original... That would actually be kind of cool.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe. Yeah. That's interesting, though.
So, you've made some headway here, mate. You're on 4 out of 5, and probably... Sorry, you got 4 out of 5, and probably unlucky enough to have gotten 5 out of 5, and you moved yourself to 6 points. So, well done.
Okay. So, you're hearing next from World Geography.
Okay.
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Excellent. Question 1. Many people believe an American by the name of George Francis Train was the basis for what globe-trotting novel character?
Oh, globe-trotting novel character. It's got, like, again, the thing that's coming to me is Phileas Fogg from Around the World in 80 Days.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
He's a globe-trotting character. We're thinking, like, old-school literary. I mean, or unless something like... Like Tintin or someone, he's pretty globe-trotting. But no, look, I think
you know the dorky kid from the French comics. That was you, Mr. Train.
Yeah, look, I'm gonna say Phileas Fogg from Around the World in 80 Days.
Train himself was quoted as saying, "Vern stole my thunder. I'm Phileas Fogg." You're absolutely correct.
Could you do it in an old-timey voice?
He was American, like. Vern stole my thunder. I'm Phileas Fogg.
I don't know.
That's
pretty good. I liked it.
They reckon Jules Verne must have read a periodical which was translated into French and put in publications all the world, written by Train about his globe-trotting adventures, one of which was exactly 80 days.
Oh, well, case closed.
I know, right?
Case fermé.
Fermé.
That's closed.
Thank you.
Okay, cool.
So yeah, one out of one.
I'm on the comeback.
Number two, the world's greatest vertical drop of around 1.25 kilometres is a sheer cliff on Mount Thor in which country?
What is this category, by the way?
World geography.
Oh, world geography. Right, okay. I thought this was cool. And I was like, this is kind of... Okay. It's a sheer drop.
Yeah.
What did you say the name was?
Mount Thor, as in the god of thunder.
Oh, see, I feel like this could be a red herring because, like, Thor, you go, oh, well, it's probably, like, Sweden or, like, it's Scandinavia because Norse mythology. But maybe is that too... I don't know. See, I think you do feel silly if you don't guess one of those. But then maybe is it too obvious? I'm trying to think of like a really mountainous country. I mean,
I don't think of many Norway or places like that as being mountainous.
Not that mountainous, I guess. When I think of mountainous, I think sort of like like the Himalayas or like South America. Maybe it's somewhere. Somewhere in the Andes, maybe like Chile or something. I don't really know. So I'm gonna guess a famously mountainous country and say Peru.
I like where you're going with that. Answer is in Canada.
Oh, sure, okay.
Yeah, so you're right. It was absolutely not in a Nordic country. I don't have any further fact on that. But yeah, about 1.25 kilometers cliff face. It has been summited. Probably not by the cliff face, though.
Wow.
Yeah. Apparently, multiple routes up. I was actually looking at a Reddit forum on climbing it. Doesn't seem to be a particularly difficult climb for
you
a mountaineer.
You do love Reddit.
Yes. Yeah. It's where I get all of my questions.
Is it so to mountaineer to just actually go straight up the face?
No. So people climbing up the other side of it.
Oh, right. Yeah. Okay.
Awesome. Okay. Very close on that. Question three. How many sovereign nations do not have an airport? All of them are located within the European continent.
This is a really good question. Mm-hmm. So, like, don't have any airports.
I'm going to give you plus or minus one for this, I reckon.
Okay. All right. I'm going to see if I can just name the countries off the top of my head.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
All right. First off, Vatican City.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
San Marino, probably. I would maybe even say Luxembourg. Probably doesn't have one. Or Luxembourg's kind of big. All right. I'm going to say those two at least. I'm going to say probably Monaco is quite small as well. I think like the others, like Luxembourg and like Liechtenstein, like they're obviously quite small, but they're not like tiny. Maybe Andorra. So that gives me four. I'm trying to think, like, I think other stuff, like there are obviously some very small countries in Europe, but I think they're probably still big enough that they would have some kind of airport, like even if it's like a really small one. So I'm gonna say four. I'm gonna say they're Monaco, Vatican City, San Marino, and Andorra. I don't think I've missed anything. I feel like I'm missing one, but no, I'm comfortable with those four.
You're getting the points.
Yeah.
The correct number is five.
Oh.
And you mentioned the remaining country.
What was it?
Liechtenstein.
Oh.
Yeah. So most of those countries have got a heliport.
Okay.
Most of them are very close to an airport.
Yeah.
And I read definitely that San Marino has at least got an airstrip, like a private grass runway. Okay. San Marino is a very interesting one, though. If you are like a millionaire, billionaire,
mm-hmm. I am.
Imagine it for a moment, and you own a private jet, and you're from a country where perhaps the regulator is a bit hard on you, or the country taxes your jet really heavily.
Yep.
The San Marino Aircraft Register is basically available, and it's purely a paperwork exercise if you're from like a country with an established aviation regulator. So say like you're in, you know, China or something, and you go, my Gulfstream, it's costing too much for me to run here. I'm going to re-register at San Marino. I'm going to get my pilots to send their licenses to get a San Marinese one, which we decided earlier we can do. All the engineers do all that. And yeah, you can basically, and then you're untouchable by your local regulator. Wow. The Isle of Man's notable for doing that as well. Clive Palmer's private jet was registered in the Isle of Man for a very long time.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's a bit like tax haven sort of vibes almost.
Yeah, like, yeah, it, if... basically, that's what it is. Yeah. Mm. Awesome. The Orange Free State, named after the Orange River, existed from 1854 to 1902 as a sovereign nation entirely... Actually, not entirely. Sorry. The Orange Free State, named after the Orange River, existed from 1854 to 1902 as a sovereign nation mainly within which modern-day country?
The Orange Free State. I'm thinking this is Africa. And I feel like I have kind of heard of this, which makes me think maybe it's like a country that, like, it's not Togo or like Cabo Verde or quite an obscure country that maybe doesn't come up a lot. I reckon it's one of the main character countries. The Orange River, the Orange Free State. I'm thinking maybe this could be South Africa.
Yeah.
Potentially. I know the old South African flag had quite a bit of orange on it. I wonder if there's any coincidence there. I'm going to say South Africa for no other reason than that I think I've heard of this.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just my gut feel. I'm going to say South Africa.
Absolutely correct.
Oh, how's it, Jasper?
Yeah, very, very well done. So it was between the Orange River mm-hmm. and a much more famous river, the Vaal River.
Okay.
It was a Boer kind of ruling, so it was actually overseen by the Brits. But
that makes sense, because that's around when the Boer War was probably finishing, hey?
But yeah, about then. And I believe the Orange River was named for the Dutch because they just really like orange.
Oh, yeah, of course. I didn't even think of that.
Yeah.
Right, that probably should have guessed that.
No, very well. So, and the remaining landmass of it is in Lesotho.
Ah, sure. Well, that's an enclave country. It's all inside South Africa, isn't it?
Yes, correct.
There you go.
Awesome. So, you're on 2 from 4. Like I said, everything's coming up, Jasper.
On the comeback.
Final question for world geography. Which West African country of 4 million people was the last country in the world to abolish slavery? Passing it as a law in 1981, but not allowing slave holders to be prosecuted until 2009.
Oh, jeepers.
Yeah.
Jeez, I feel like I know this fact as well. I feel like I heard this recently-ish.
Yeah.
I'm going through
a family member told it to me fairly recently.
Yeah. I'm just trying to think. West African countries, I'm thinking like Senegal. I'm thinking like...
4 million people.
4 million, yeah. See, which for an African country is not many at all. So, West African, there are so many like small countries up in West Africa. I reckon actually, now that I'm thinking through the countries, I'm thinking like Ivory Coast, I'm thinking the Mauritania. I'm thinking this actually might be Sierra Leone though. I've got in my head that potentially it's, I'm just gonna keep thinking around there. Like Liberia's around there, don't think it's Liberia. Thinking like, I mean, I said Togo before. I don't think it's Togo though. Ghana potentially, Guinea-Bissau. I don't know. I'm gonna guess Sierra Leone.
It's a country that you said. It is Mauritania.
Oh no.
Yeah. So it was.
That's not a big country in terms of population.
I think we both heard that from our cousin Ash, who's travelled through Mauritania.
What was he doing there when he was traveling in Africa?
Well, he was working in a hospital in Senegal and wasn't enjoying it very much, so he decided he was going to make his way up via land to Morocco. And traveled through Mauritania, which is, he said, was actually, the people were actually very lovely there.
Geographically, it's quite a large country.
It is,
but it's quite funny, like the outline of it's quite distinct. It almost looks like it's got like a looks like a sort of, I don't know, blade or something. Like the outline's quite distinct.
Yeah, it's famously unpopulous and a lot of it is desert.
Yeah,
okay. Well, very close there, but for the category, you've ended up with 2 from 5.
Okay, cool. So leading into round number 3, Harley's on 6 points and I'm on 4 points.
Round 3.
Okay, Sweet Chariot, question 1. The film Chariots of Fire documents the athletic journeys and religious convictions of two British runners at the 1924 Olympics, held in which city? This city has been granted the equal most Summer Olympic Games of any city.
Okay. I think the equal most would probably be 3. The fact that you say granted instead of hosted, I reckon, is a bit of a clue in and of itself. I know that at that point, we weren't sending them overseas, particularly the Olympic Games.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't seen the film. I'm thinking either London or Paris. And only because he said granted, I'm thinking Paris, because I think that's an upcoming Olympics. So I'm going to lock in Paris.
Yeah, your reasoning, you saw straight through me there. Because I didn't want to say it, and I'd already hosted them like the Eagle was. Yeah. So, but I also kind of thought that just saying who hosted the 1924 Olympics might be a bit stiff, bit of a tough question.
Mm.
But you're correct. Paris hosted the Olympics in 1900 and 1924 and will do so again in 2024. Mm. Chariots of Fire won 4 Oscars, including Best Picture in 1982, and it featured the film debut of one Kenneth Branagh, who had a small uncredited role as a student. Okay, so you're off to a good start. Question 2. A 9-minute chariot race is one of the most iconic sequences in the 1959 epic film Ben-Hur, which at 3 hours 32 minutes long is the third longest movie to win the Best Picture Oscar.
Mm-hmm.
Which 1939 movie at 3 hours 58 minutes is the longest and was based on a 1936 novel of the same name?
Yeah, I don't know films from this era very well.
You would definitely have heard of this movie.
I want to say Gone with the Wind, but I wasn't sure that it won Best... Did you say Best Picture winner?
Yeah, won Best Picture.
I thought The Wizard of Oz won it, like really controversially. Or maybe it was like Judy Garland won Best Actress or Best whatever the category was. I'm going to say Gone with the Wind because frankly, it's about the only film that I know from that era. And having seen The Wizard of Oz, I would have frankly worked out that it was 3.5 hours long. It was notably our sister's favourite movie as a kid and was played on repeat in our house.
Gone with the Wind?
No.
Wizard of Oz.
Gone with the Wind's notably very long, so I'm going to lock in Gone with the Wind.
Yeah, well, you're correct. Gone with the Wind is right. And you're right, it did come out in 1939, the same year as Wizard of Oz, but it beat Wizard of Oz for Best Picture. At 90 minutes long, the 1955 winner Marty is the shortest, closely followed by Annie Hall at 93 minutes. Question 3. Which musician recorded a surprise reggae version of Swing Low, Sweet Chariot for his 1975 studio album, There's One in Every Crowd? This singer and guitarist holds the distinction of being the only person inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame 3 times.
Okay. I think this actor dabbled into reggae a little bit. And looking back on it, there are some people that might not be so impressed about it. I think that it was Eric Clapton, and he very famously also did I Shot the Sheriff, and everyone, you know. Yeah, so like a slave chanting song recorded like, you know, in reggae style by a very Caucasian and very conservative man, as we now know, might not have gone down so well. So I'm going to lock in Eric Clapton.
Yeah, you should hear his opinions about not white people. Some of them are not particularly nice. But you're right, it is Eric Clapton. Clapton was inducted in back-to-back years into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 1992 and 1993 as a member of the Yardbirds and a member of Cream, and then as a solo artist in the year 2000. But yeah, honestly, like, it's not bad, his Swing Low, Sweet Chariot. Like, it's very reggae.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not so bad. You're right, I'd forgotten that he did a version of I Shot the Sheriff as well.
Yeah, I figured as well, 3 nominations, he's been in so many bands. Like, he's been in, like you said, Yardbirds, Cream, Derek and the Dominoes.
Derek and the Dominoes as well, And a solo artist, obviously.
Yeah, yeah. So, no, that makes sense.
Mate, you're fast building up an unassailable lead here as we head into question 4. Mentioned in the lyrics of Swing Low, Sweet Chariot, what is the only country in Asia whose name is the same as its largest river?
Yeah, I see. Believe it or not, Swing Low, Sweet Chariot is one of my favourite songs.
Really?
Yes.
Ever?
Yes.
Wow. Why?
Now that I mention my... I mean, I've got no problem with Eric Clapton singing Swing Low, Sweet Chariot, but Johnny Cash did as well, and in a very early gospel record. And so I know that it talks a lot about Jordan, which is also... The River Jordan's pretty heavily referenced in the Bible, and I think in the song it's referencing the river rather than the country. So I'm looking at Jordan.
Correct. It is referencing the river. I believe it's... referencing like the river that the person who wrote the song was
when I look over Jordan, what do I see coming forth to carry me home?
Yeah, it looked like the River Jordan. I'm not sure which specific river was being sung about in Swing Low, Sweet Chariot. Doesn't matter. You're correct. It is Jordan. The Jordan River, referenced in the Bible, stretches 251 kilometers from the Anti-Lebanon mountain range
to the Dead Sea. Mm-hmm. And you sung the lyric. That was my other fun fact, was the actual lyric. So, mm-hmm. mate, you're absolutely bossing it today. You're on 10 points, and you've got a question to come here in Sweet Chariot. Question 5. Injuries sustained from a chariot accident are one of the causes of death proposed for which legendary ruler who died at age 19 in roughly the year 1323 BC? This person's remains were rediscovered by British archaeologist Howard Carter in 1922 inside an extravagant tomb.
Okay, well, you didn't say Roman or Greek or Athenian, anything like that. No. Only leader I can really think of that era is Julius Caesar.
Okay.
Who famously did not die young or in a mysterious circumstance.
Yep.
Only other legendary leader I can think of is Mark Antony. Okay. Or Mark Antony. I don't even remember which one. Not a history scholar myself, so I'm going to lock in Mark Antony.
You slipped up at the last one, mate. It's about time you made a mistake. It's actually Tutankhamun.
Ah, okay. So there you go.
Most theories about the Egyptian pharaoh's death involve some kind of traumatic injury due to how broken his mummy was when it was rediscovered. In 2013, scientists at Cranfield Forensic Institute claimed their work with car accident investigations confirmed the chariot theory. But Professor Albert Zink, who is the head of the Institute for Mummy Studies, side note, awesome place to work. He's countered the idea, saying genetic evidence suggests that Tutankhamun's mother and father were siblings, and so therefore he would have been so disfigured that he wouldn't have been able to ride in the chariot in the first place. Pretty upsetting to think about. But yeah. anyway, one of the theories is that he may have fallen from a chariot and died.
There you go. I like the thought that he was like a 19-year-old, and they're like, mate, Tutankhamun, you're driving like a bit of a dickhead. You know, like, I get it, you're young, you're full of adrenaline, but the stats are... That's why insurance on chariots is so much higher for younger people.
You know? RBT, like, Officer Burrows has pulled over 19-year-old Tut speeding down the Highway.
Yeah. Tutankhamun alleges that if he loses his license, his job as a pharaoh may be in jeopardy.
Oh my God. And there's always like the boys belligerent at first. They're when they're getting like the booze bus, they're like, oh no, if I want to get back, Cleopatra's going to be so mad about this. Oh, man.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay, mate, you've finished the game with 10 out of 15 points, which is quite exceptional. Well done.
Excellent. So your next category is cool. Are you ready to hear a bunch of cool questions?
Cannot wait. Let's go.
In 2010, GQ, Gentleman's Quarterly, released a top 10 coolest men in the world list. Name... I'm wondering if you should be naming one or two of the top five people. They include a royal, two actors, one English, one American, an aide to Obama, and a rapper. Do you think one or two out of five?
Which year is this, sir?
2010.
Okay.
So, how about this? If you can get one from three guesses or two from five guesses.
I'm going to try for one from three. Is that all right?
Yep.
I'm going to have a guess and say that the British actor might be Idris Elba. He's a pretty cool man. Pretty suave sort of fella. So, I reckon he could be up there. And we're also thinking cool, right? Which I think is crucial to note here that, I don't know, it's cool is just quite a specific thing. Right?
It is. Look, the list of these people, I don't think of any of them as being particularly cool myself. Okay. Again, I'm hardly an expert on the topic.
Well, okay, maybe I'm better. I'm going to say Idris Elba is one. I'm going to say the royal it's got to be like, that's got to be something I can guess pretty easily. So I reckon either Prince William or Prince Harry is probably there. I'm going to say that Prince Harry is cooler because he has more hair than Prince William, potentially. And he's also probably a bit younger back then. He definitely was. It was a few years ago. People age. I'm thinking Idris Elba, Prince Harry. Let's have a crack at the American actor. I'm going to say... who was a cool American actor in 2010? I'm going to say Ryan Gosling.
Okay.
He might be Canadian, actually. I'm going to say Ryan Gosling.
You've got the point. Prince Harry.
Sweet.
Okay. The number one coolest man in the world, according to GQ, believe it or not, in 2010. The British actor was Robert Pattinson.
Oh, yeah. Well, he's pretty cool.
Pretty cool and pretty notable in 2010.
Yeah, with Twilight and stuff. He was huge around then.
The aide to Obama was called Reggie Love.
Okay.
I don't know if that's a really cool or really lame name.
I think it's a cool name.
I kind of think of Reggie Love as well as having like broken glasses and a bow tie.
Yeah,
on.
It could go either way. You could really rock it. Like, you could be like some like buff guy like, hey, I'm Reggie. What's up?
Reggie Love.
Or like, you could be like Urkel.
Yes. Equivalent. Yeah.
What was so cool about him?
I don't know. I didn't look it up. Okay. I just put his name down.
Right.
Dizzy Rascal was the rapper.
Really?
I know. That was my thought exactly.
I would have thought someone like... I mean, maybe it's a bit early for Kendrick or Childish Gambino, but I would have thought those guys are cooler than Dizzy Rascal.
I think...
That sort of vein, yeah, of rapper.
I feel like Dizzy Rascal has always been... Yeah, like a little bit boppy, bubblegum.
Yeah.
Like, not very street. I just looked it up. Reggie Love was a college basketball player.
Oh, right. Okay. But who became an age?
Sorry, Reggie Love. Did I say Reggie Young? Reggie Young was the guitarist who played in the touring band of a lot of country music.
No, Reggie Love.
Reggie Love, yeah.
Oh, he was a basketballer.
He was a college basketball player.
Who became an aide to Ray Omar?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
oh, yeah. That is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Top five in the world? Maybe not.
Maybe not, but yeah, there we go. The American actor Jason Schwartzman.
I can't picture him. I can't picture who that is.
Exactly. That I looked him up and I went, oh yeah, I remember him.
Is he in like Wes Anderson movies?
I can't tell you that. The movie around that time that I've seen him in is what's it called? Where Michael Cera plays the comic book character.
Scott Pilgrim.
Scott Pilgrim, yeah. He's in Scott Pilgrim as one of the evil exes.
Right.
I'm just showing him a photo now of Jason Schwartzman.
Yeah, I think that guy is in Wes Anderson movies.
Right, yeah. But apparently the fifth coolest man in the world in 2010.
Really?
So, yes.
Mate, was Steve Schwartzman the guy that wrote it, like his dad or something?
There you go.
I think you're a cool son.
Yeah. Well, you're on one from one.
Okay.
Flying cool. colors to start off with. Next question. Question two. The town of Cool is in which western US state? It was formerly known as Cave Valley, the town of Cool.
Wow, okay. Mm. Western US state. So there's not that many I can sort of pick from here. It's not like East Coast where there's a bunch of stuff going on.
Yeah.
All right, Cool Oregon, Cool Washington, Cool California. I mean, Cool California sounds pretty good.
Yeah.
Cool. And you said it was something caves?
It was formerly known as Cave Valley.
Which I feel like that's quite Californian, I reckon. Mm. Sort of like sprawling, like... outdoor areas, mountains, and very sort of varied terrain. I'm going to say it's Cool California.
Absolutely correct. It is Cool California.
Do you reckon, just before you do the fun facts, do you reckon living in a place with a good or bad name changes house prices? Like, I was thinking this, right? Like, if you lived on, like, Butt Street or something, when I used to deliver papers at uni, as my job, there was a street I used to live there. Deliver to called Duty Street. And
yeah,
I was always like, man, would you be a bit embarrassed living on Duty Street? Do you reckon that affects house price? Like, Cool maybe is the opposite. Maybe it's more expensive to live there.
Look, I didn't look too far. I couldn't work out why they changed the name to Cool.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, we've long debated what the worst suburb name in Sydney and indeed Australia is.
Yeah.
I think, I don't know if I could live in a place called Dingley.
Oh, it's pretty bad.
Or Smiggin Hole.
Smiggin Holes. That's near the Snowy Mountains.
Yeah,
isn't
that's just Snowy Mountains. Or Smeaton Grange.
It's pretty bad. Yeah. Clementon Park is
Clementon
another one.
Park,
in Sydney.
Yeah.
Not awesome.
Cool is about 60 kilometers from Sacramento.
Okay.
2,500 people. Not a very large town, but you are absolutely correct. It is in California. Great. Excellent. So batting two from two. What did you need here to win?
I don't think I can win. I think, oh, no, I think I'm on four. I was on four, and you're on 10. So, no, I think
it's dead rubber.
Unfortunately.
Oh.
I'm playing for the love of the game.
Absolutely.
And for the fans.
Absolutely. And not to mention to learn a thing or two.
Absolutely. That's what we're all here for.
Which of the following is a model of car made by Chinese manufacturer Haval? A cool cat? Cool dog? Cool man? Or cool kid?
Cool cat. Cool dog. I mean, cool cat is like an action. That's an expression, right?
Yeah.
Guys, with a cool cat over there, or like cool kid. Oh, let's go hang out with the cool kids. I feel like this could be one of those two. Cool dog and cool man sound like, and maybe this is actually kind of the point, is that maybe they sound like the kind of thing that someone who maybe doesn't speak English as their first language would name the guy. Sorry, are these translations out of?
No. This is the Western marketing name.
Right.
Of them.
Okay.
Yeah.
Which
so.
I reckon someone in marketing would shut down cool man or cool dog because it's not really an expression.
Yeah.
So it's either cool cat or cool kid. I'm gonna say it's cool cat.
Mm. Look, I really love your logic, but unfortunately the Haval cool dog It's a compact Chinese SUV, and I saw some articles suggesting it might be coming to Australia soon.
How much does a cool dog set you back, just out of interest?
It's not available yet in Australia.
Okay, but like...
But it is on the radar for coming here,
apparently. Wow, okay. Mm. So just testing the Australian market. Guys, yeah. I don't know if Australia is quite cool enough for this
exactly,
car.
Yeah. I don't know how it hasn't been shut down. It does not sound like a car in the slightest.
But maybe that's part of it. Maybe it's like... Other car names like Odyssey or like Astra, like those sound a bit fancy. Cool dog.
I was going to pronounce it Coolman. Which, but that kind of sounds like your dorky neighbor, doesn't it?
Yeah, like Brett Coolman. Yeah. Oh, yeah, he used to like smoke weed in the toilets at high school. He was so cool.
So we're on 2 from 3 here.
Yeah.
Mike Posner, you familiar with him?
I've heard the name.
Recorded the worldwide charting single, or close to worldwide charting single, Cooler Than Me.
Mm-hmm.
In 2009 in his dorm room at what college, one of the most prestigious in North Carolina?
Wow, okay.
Do you know the song?
Yeah, probably not because you
can't. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I do know. I reckon North Carolina, I think Duke might be in North Carolina. And I know they've got quite a famous basketball team. So it's the only reason that they're kind of on my radar. I think I was talking to someone a while ago who was from North Carolina and they went to, I think, this is an American. I think she said that she went to North Carolina State or something like another one, and Duke was like their rivalry.
Yep.
So anyway, I'm going to say it's Duke.
You're absolutely correct.
Oh, sweet.
Very notably, the alma mater of Reggie Love.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Going back to Reggie.
Final question of cool. What temperature is the freezing point of water in Fahrenheit?
Oh, no. So I'm going to glitch on this like I almost glitched on the... SpaceX question or the space question the other week. I just don't know, to be honest. I think they both meet at minus 40, which makes me think it's not some ridiculous, like I know like 100 degrees Fahrenheit is about like 40 or 50 degrees Celsius. Or it's like getting very hot.
Yeah, like 100's like about 40, I think.
Yeah, like a hot, a really hot day.
Kind yeah.
of. I'm going to say it's a bit above zero. For us, I'm going to say that it is 16 degrees Fahrenheit.
See, I thought you... Like, I swear we got this at Pub Trivia once. Did we? Question. Yeah, yeah. The answer's 32 Fahrenheit.
Oh, okay. Right.
Yeah. For some reason, my brain associated... Because I remember... Maybe it wasn't with you. I remember getting it at Pub Trivia. My brain, like, associates that as being, like, a day that you're really beginning to go, it's a hot day, I need to worry about myself. Like, as an Australian anyway. Above 32 yeah. it's like... Beach day, don't want to do much.
Yeah.
Let's have a think about how, you know, about having windows open at appropriate times of Definitely. The day. Yeah, my head's always associated that. So 32 Fahrenheit.
That's a good way to remember it. And that's a good fact to know because, you're right. Like,
well, yeah. See, if you, I know this is a nerdy thing to say, but I'm pretty sure if you knew the exact number that 100 was and that negative 40 was where they met, probably write out an equation to work out where zero sits.
You almost could. You'd have to be a bit better at maths than what I am, but I'm sure it is possible. So I've finished the round here with, in total, 7 out of 10.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, 7 out of 15, which means, Harley, you've claimed your maiden victory on Trivia Champ or Chump with a very respectable 10 out of 15.
Harley, you are the champ. Jasper, you are the chump.
Awesome.
How are you feeling?
I'm feeling like an absolute champion right now.
Hook it to my veins, baby. This is why we play the game.
Yeah, yeah. It's like when you're cutting wrapping paper and it starts gliding.
Yeah.
That's the feeling I'm getting right now.
I'm still terrible at cutting wrapping paper for presents.
Myself.
I really struggled this year at Christmas or last year at Christmas. So that just about wraps it up here for another week on Trivia Champ or Trivia Chump. Thank you so much for listening. We would love it if you could tell your friends all about us and chuck us a follow on social media. If you're on social media... Harley, to round us out for the day, do you want to give us your best Gail Lewis, Walmart lady, signing for the podcast?
Attention, Trivia Champ or Chump. This is Harley Bruce, 3-episode co-host, Champ or Chump, Sydney City, 2000, signing out.
Trivia is the real winner here. I think we can all agree.